Hey, hi everybody. I'm a PhD student at Kyoto University, and I would like to introduce our recent work on the importance of tidal resonances in emrys. And this work is in collaboration with Beatrice, Elvin, and my supervisor, Takahiro. So first, setting up the model. So we don't consider the isolated emery scenario, and we have a perturber in close vicinity of an emery, and I will denote it by M star. And there are already some theoretical studies hinting towards the presence of black holes close to the emery systems. For example, this work by Imami and Loeb showed that mass segregation effect can drag massive or stellar black holes close to about 2 to 5 AU from Sag A star. And in addition to that, we can also expect some indirect observational signatures of close perturbers, maybe in near future, by studying the motion of S stars. For example, as of 2019, the closest known is S62 with pericenter distance of 16 AU from Sag A star. And its motion can give strong bounds on the mass distribution in the galactic center. And a work in 2019 by Beatrice Bonga, Huan Yang, and Scott Hu showed that these tidal perturbers can induce a resonance, which they named as tidal resonances. So in this work, we wanted to survey the parameter space and see how often these tidal resonances occur and how much of the parameter space they can influence. Okay. So as we know, at zeroth order, we have an integrable system, which allows us to introduce a set of action angle variables such that the action variables are conserved and the angle variables increase at a fixed rate in time. And as you go at first order in mass ratio, denoted here by eta, the orbit starts to deviate from the geodesic due to the self force. Now, since we have a close perturber, so in addition, we will also have a tidal force with another smallness parameter, epsilon, which will characterize the strength of the tidal field. And it is defined something like this. So here, M star is again the mass of the perturber, and R is its distance from the central black hole. And notice that when the perturber is introduced, the background axisymmetry is broken, and we have a dependence on the axial position of the small body. Okay. So much like self-forced resonances, which I think Zach and Lorenzo will focus on after my talk, we have a similar scheme to obtain a tidal resonance condition. So we work in the adiabatic approximation, which needs the time averaged piece of the force you're considering. So here I will only focus on the tidal force. And to do that, we first switch to Fourier domain. So here we have summation on all the underlying modes. And on taking the long time average, only the 000 piece survives, while these fast oscillating terms are averaged out. But this isn't always true. So when the orbital frequencies are commensurate, the change rate of this phase variable is slow, and we need to take into account the amplitudes corresponding to those particular n, k, and m. Okay. So before going further, so why exactly do we worry about resonances? So as I said, that when this resonance condition is satisfied, we need to take into account the additional flux, which can impart a kick in the conserved quantities. So here in this plot, I'm showing jump in LZ for 3 0 minus 2 resonance, where we consider a perturber of 30 solar mass at a distance of about 250 m or 10 AU from Sag A star. And as you can see, this kick size is very small. So this is the order. But if these resonances are encountered early in the inspiral phase, this can lead to significant dephasing in the waveform. Okay. And To evaluate the tidal force, we needed the perturbation to central black hole spacetime due to this tidal field. So we used this metric of tidally perturbed curve from given by Yunus and Gonzalez. And in our work, for simplicity, we restrict the tidal perturber on the equatorial plane and consider its quadrupole nature. Another assumption that we make is that the tidal field is stationary. And this is, of course, valid as long as the orbital period of the perturber is much longer than the resonance timescale. But it can happen that a perturber is very close and this condition is not valid. So in that case, we have to modify the resonance condition. So in addition to the Emery orbital frequencies, we should also take into account the frequencies of the perturber. And here plus and minus would correspond to the direction motion of the third body. Okay, and in this tidally perturbed matrix, we first compute the induced acceleration with respect to background spacetime, and then compute change rate in LZ and Q. And here we don't have a change in energy because we are considering stationary perturbation. Okay. So first, here I'm showing an example of how often these resonances are encountered. So in this plot, the central supermassive black hole has a spin parameter 0.9, and the horizontal and vertical axis show the behavior of eccentricity and the simulator's rectum respectively. And these black lines are the contours for the tidal resonance, and these labels correspond to the integers n, k, and m respectively. So if we start an in-spiral from about 9m with initial eccentricity 0.7, we see that it crosses about 4 resonances before it finally goes into plunge. And here is a rough order estimate, which shows that an Emery with semi-major axis less than 20m will lie in the LISA frequency band. And you can see, compare the scale of these low order resonances, and we can say that they lie well within the LISA band, at least for Sag A star. Okay. So far, the picture seems like that, okay, whenever you have an Emery and it crosses a tidal resonance, we expect a kick in the conserved quantities, and which should translate to the dephasing in waveform, but there is more to it. So the jump size in the conserved quantities, LZ and Q, it is quite sensitive on the phase. So in this plot, I'm showing change in LZ and Q with respect to the phase it enters in the resonance. So as you can see, that orbit may enter a resonance where jump is almost zero. And this would imply that there is no effect on the gravitational waveform. So it can happen that an Emery crosses a resonance without feeling its effect. And in the following slides, I will fine tune this phase to show you the maximum influence these resonances can cause. So first, we also found some trends followed by these tidal resonances. So we can see how these resonance strength depends on the orbital parameters. So in these plots, I'm showing the dependence on spin of the central object for 3, 0, -2 resonance. On the left plot, you see that for prograde orbits, both LZ and Q decrease with increase in spin. So for a rapidly spinning central object, the resonance strength is smaller. However, for retrograde orbit, both change in LZ and Q increase as the spin increases. And this is expected because the tidal resonance occur at larger values of the simulator's rectum. And hence the acting tidal force is greater for retrograde orbits. And here the dots just present the values we obtained from our semi-analytic calculations, and the lines are obtained from the fittings that we computed.
2 minutes.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so next we find that we show here the dependence on the orbital eccentricity. So we find that irrespective of the direction rotation of the orbit or the resonance that you're considering, both LZ and Q will increase as the eccentricity increases. So you need to multiply this prefactor to see the rise in eccentricity. Okay. Another parameter is the orbital inclination. And here on the horizontal axis, we have cosine of this orbital inclination. And what we find is that both LZ and Q decrease as the inclination decreases. And here you don't see any sensitive dependence for LZ on the inclination, but this is only because here I'm considering a special resonance, which has the polar integer K as zero. So this is 3 0 minus two resonance. Okay. So moving to the observational viewpoint. So we want to focus on the impact on the orbital phase of gravitational waves. So to estimate the accumulated phase shift, we evolve two orbits, one with the resonance jump, delta Q and delta LZ, and one without the resonance jump. So at each time, we compare this azimuthal frequency from the two evolutions and use this relation to compute the accumulation phase. And as we know that given high SNR, LISA can resolve up to order one in phase. Okay. So we surveyed the whole parameter space for different resonances and for both prograde and retrograde orbits. But following the time constraint, I'm showing here just one example for 3 minus 4 plus 2 resonance. And on the horizontal axis, we have cosine of orbital inclination. And on the y-axis, we have the orbital eccentricity. And the leftmost plot is for spin for the supermassive black hole to be 0.1, and the middle is for 0.5, and the rightmost is for 0.9. And the color shows just the log of accumulated phase. So the value below minus one will not be observable by LISA. So as you can see that for spin 0.1 case, most of the parameter space is dephased due to this particular resonance. And as spin increases, orbits with high eccentricity and inclination are in the observable range. And for these particular plots, I have chosen a 30 solar mass perturber at a distance of 250 m or 10 AU. But you can simply use this scaling relation to get dephasing for different masses and distance of the perturber. And if I could show you the 302 resonance, which is encountered at least 2 years before the plunge, then the accumulated shift would be much higher because of the number of cycles. But okay, here is my summary slide, but I think we can jump to questions now.
Okay, thank you, Preeti. And we probably have time for one question. Leo?
Hi, Preeti, nice talk. There's something that I don't quite understand, which is on resonances, you will also get these kinds of nonlinear effects, like the breakup of the resonant tori, and you can get like, you know, islands where you'll have the frequencies all, the frequency ratio being kind of constant over a wider range of parameter space. And does this type of, does the calculation that you're doing, can it capture that kind of nonlinear resonant effect?
So I think what you're talking about is the prolonged or the sustained resonances, where the ratio of the frequencies, for example, omega r by omega theta remains constant for a very long time. But in this case, I'm only focusing on the transient case. And to have these sustained resonances or prolonged resonances, we need to hit a right balance between the tidal force, which is causing this resonance, and the self force, which is driving the small object out of the resonance. So maybe to obtain this balance, we need a very artificial setting with a very large tidal perturbation. But I have not looked into it very thoroughly yet. So this is something to be explored.
Okay. Yeah, maybe we should continue that in Slack or something, because I don't really understand why. I mean, yeah, obviously how long you're in the resonance depends on both the width of the resonance and the self force. But I just don't understand whether or not the type of calculation that you're doing can see the fact that
it can certainly see those effects, but you need a very large tidal perturbation to see that. I think we can continue on Slack. I can tell you more about it.
Thanks.